Hello again, everyone, wherever you may be, and welcome to KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, your window on the world of Iowa politics, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin, of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Welcome, Laura.
Good to be here, Dennis.
Laura, as expected, the state Supreme Court agreed last week to consider Governor Reynolds' request to let a new restrictive abortion policy take effect. And what a week it was for Republican presidential candidates in Iowa. We are going to talk about all of that, every single bit of it, on this, the 131st edition of Capital Week. But first, that new political poll published in the New York Times on this Monday, a stunning poll showing, Laura, that President Trump is simply crushing the competition, including his nearest challenger, Ron DeSantis.
Yes, and it's not just one poll. I mean, this was a particularly devastating poll, I think, for Ron DeSantis and the rest of the field, but the totality of the polling is impossible to ignore. I mean, you can't say that the sample was off, because Donald Trump has an enormous lead over the rest of the field, and even all the other candidates combined don't total Donald Trump support right now. So it's almost like a race where Trump is the incumbent, even though he is no longer in the White House.
Trump is leading DeSantis in this poll by 37 points nationally, 54% to 17%. No other GOP challenger, not a single one, has more than 3%.
Yes, and I think what has to be most discouraging for the DeSantis team is that Trump is leading among all the important demographics and on all the issues. If you're DeSantis and you're looking for a way to try to make some headway against Donald Trump, right now, Trump is leading among people who think abortion should be legal and people who think abortion should be banned. He's leading among people who think we should continue to send military aid to Ukraine and people who think we should stop aiding Ukraine. And on, they asked about a number of issues. And in each case, Trump is ahead. So it's just difficult to see what's the roadmap here.
So we have heard many times, and you and I have talked about it, that if every other GOP candidate got out of the race and just made it a two-person race between Trump and DeSantis, it might be close. This poll does away with that idea. In that case, if it were only Trump and DeSantis, Trump would bury DeSantis 62 to 31%.
Yes. And I mean, I think that all of the polling that we've seen from the early states is consistent with that. Donald Trump has a commanding lead in all of the state level polls and in all of the national polls, and he still leads, even if it is down to a two-person race.
So before we move on, a question, Laura, where has Ron DeSantis gone wrong? How did his campaign never get off the ground?
Well, I think there have been a lot of articles about how his campaign spent too much money, too fast, maybe the strategy of emphasizing wokeness and some of the things he's done in Florida. Maybe that was out of touch with where some of the GOP primary electorate is. But I think that this poll shows really that even if Ron DeSantis were running the absolute best campaign possible, the Republican primary electorate is not really looking for an alternative to Donald Trump. I mean, they are very supportive of the former president. And I think that would have been, in fairness to DeSantis, that would have been very hard to shake. Now, I also think that Ron DeSantis isn't a great campaigner, and this communication strategy has been way off. But like I said, even if he were running an absolutely outstanding campaign, pretty tough to see where he could get some traction.
Meanwhile, last week, former President Trump charged with two new counts of obstruction based on allegations related to the misusing of documents after he left the White House. Two more counts, which probably won't make any difference to the Republican Party or the voters, but nevertheless, the counts keep piling up.
Yes, and I thought that the superseding indictment, I mean, it did have, they added another defendant, and that was somebody who apparently said that the boss wants surveillance camera footage deleted. This was after aides at Mar-a-Lago had been moving boxes around that contained classified documents. So fairly incriminating statements. As we've always said, everyone is presumed innocent, so we're not prejudging anything, but the indictments, they do have some very strong evidence, and so this is something that is... I mean, it certainly adds to the obstruction charge. I mean, there was also a charge added related to one additional document that the former president apparently had at his best Bedminster Club in New Jersey that he shouldn't have had. So there was another withholding. But the obstruction claim, I think, is what grabbed most of the headlines.
And now for one of the favorite parts of this show, I call it the Capital Week Caucus Almanac. Naturally, we're going to talk about the GOP's annual Lincoln dinner this past Friday night at the Iowa Event Center in Des Moines. All of them were there, all the GOP candidates except Chris Christie. It was the first time Trump and DeSantis were gathered together in Iowa. More than 1,000 people gathered for the event. Mr. Trump spoke last. We're going to talk about him first because he's the front runner. And he said he came to deliver a very simple message.
Yes, he said Iowa's never had a better friend in the White House than President Donald J. Trump. And I think we know that. There was no teleprompter there. And so he was reading from notes. And this was a very different Trump speech if you've ever seen. Usually he's riffing. He's talking off the top of his head. He's speaking in a very animated way. And the candidates all had very strict time limits. So he was really reading from the paper. And it was almost low energy, I would say, to paraphrase Trump himself and how he used to describe Jeb Bush. It didn't seem like he really wanted to be there. But I don't think that mattered because this crowd was very favorable to him. And I just had to say that this afternoon, in the context of this indictment we were just talking about, I was reading the latest story on The Onion, which had the headline, Trump campaign worried there might not be enough indictments to meet all fundraising goals. And he's definitely not trying to sweep these criminal cases under the rug. I mean, he got around toward the end of his speech to say, they're coming after me because I'm running, because they know I can win. And this is why they're targeting me.
Right. He said, if I weren't running, I'd have no one coming after me. Well, we don't know about that. We'll see how it plays out. Florida Governor.
He was under investigation before he was running. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis also received a warm ovation when he got out there. He joked about avoiding drama in the White House if he's elected, saying, and I'm quoting now, I can promise you this, in my White House, there will be no cocaine allowed. And that got a pretty good response. But the response was still less than Mr. Trump received.
Yes. I mean, Ron DeSantis had some very solid applause lines compared to some of the candidates who had a much chillier reception. But it really wasn't. I mean, he got around toward the end of his speech, sort of making an electability argument where he said, look, you know, we're not getting a mulligan on 2024. We either win this election or the Democrats are going to throw the country in a hole that's going to be hard for us to get out of. And so, but he's like most of the other candidates, he stopped short of saying that he thinks Trump can't win the election or that he thinks that Trump has lost too many elections. So, I mean, he's going to be trying to convince people that he's the better general election candidate, but it just seems like that's going to be a very tough sell with the Iowa Republican electorate.
Speaking of a tough sell to an audience, former Vice President Mike Pence was there. Many Republicans hate him, of course, because he did not follow Trump's request to overturn the results of the election. He did not mention Mr. Trump on Friday night. He asked for Iowans to support him because he would bring dignity to the White House. And the response was almost nothing.
I mean, it is a little bit painful to watch Mike Pence and these speeches he's giving. He's reciting lines that clearly his speechwriters intend to be applause lines and is getting maybe a smattering of applause. I mean, he said that he was going to restore the ban on transgender people serving in the military. Very little reaction. I mean, it's true that he didn't mention Donald Trump by name. He definitely alluded to Trump because he said we must resist the politics of personality and the siren song of populism unmoored to conservative values. Different times call for a different leadership. So that he's definitely saying that Trump was good. What he did was good, but now we need somebody different from Trump. But he won't come right out and say that. And people, I mean, frankly, the audience there and the polls are showing that there just aren't a lot of Republicans very interested in Mike Pence right now.
And as we go down the list of the candidates who spoke on Friday night, bear in mind, again, as we said off the top of the show, not one of these that we're going to talk about has more than 3% support in the latest New York Times poll. Former UN Ambassador Nikki Haley said she was committed to telling the truth, and that means admitting Republicans played a role in the nation's current budget problems. That was somewhat bold, and she also called for term limits and, yes, competency tests for some officials over a certain age.
Yes, and I want to say, I just want to emphasize that New York Times poll was a nationwide poll of Republicans, that the Iowa polls have shown that a number of candidates are in that 5-6% range, and Nikki Haley is one of them. And in fact, Tim Scott was even in double digits. But nationally, nobody's registering more than 3%. Yes, I mean, Nikki Haley, okay, she said that she's going to have some hard truths about Republicans. She didn't say anything that I think would be a hard truth that for Iowa Republicans. She was criticizing Republicans in Washington, D.C., and I think that's a little bit of an easier sell. So I'll be waiting to hear her say something that maybe would get the crowd riled up in Iowa. And she's talked about this before, this mental competency test. She got in a little bit of a dig on President Biden, saying that these competency tests ask very easy questions and things like what town were you born in and how many grandchildren do you have? of course, alluding to the grandchild that the Bidens have not met and only recently acknowledged publicly.
She says officials over 75 years old ought to take mental competency tests. And she said this in the wake of a couple of very difficult to watch videos last week of Mitch McConnell freezing while he was holding a news conference and Dianne Feinstein having difficulty understanding she was supposed to say yes on a vote.
Yes. And I mean, the Senate, I believe right now the U.S. Senate is the oldest. The average age is the oldest that it's ever been. And the leadership is quite old. And so, and actually Mitch McConnell is not that popular even among Republicans. So again, this is a line that she can use. And I think she can feel very confident that she's not going to offend many Iowa Republicans by saying something that could be interpreted as a slight on Mitch McConnell.
Former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson spoke. He was the first candidate Friday night to launch a broadside against Trump, and he got a smattering of applause, but nothing really big.
No, and he, generally speaking, I mean, he's had a chilly reception this year. He has not drawn large audiences. He's spoken at some of these big events, not gotten large applause. I mean, he talked about his career. He's served in Congress. He's been a governor. He was a U.S. attorney. He's got a lot of experience in a lot of areas. He served in the Bush administration and Homeland Security. But it, just, again, people, I don't think that the Republican electorate is really looking for somebody new. You have to give somebody a reason to fire Trump before they're looking at hiring anybody else. And right now, it just doesn't seem like very many Republicans are interested in firing Trump.
I'm not sure what former Texas Congressman Will Hurd was thinking about Friday night when he came onto stage, what he thought the audience response would be when he said Donald Trump is not running to represent the people that voted for him in 2016 and 2020. He's running to stay out of prison. He was booed off the stage.
He was booed off the stage, but I'm here to tell you, Dennis, I think if you're talking about the long game, this could have been a very successful speech for him. I mean, clearly in the room he bombed, right? I mean, this is not what anybody wants to bomb, but I don't think he was really coming here because he thinks he's going to do well in the Iowa caucuses. He's not building a big organization. He doesn't have field staff on the ground or anything like that. He's only 45 years old. I mean, he can run again. He's out here. If Donald Trump becomes the nominee and doesn't win the election, then somebody like Will Hurd can point to this and say, look, I tried to warn everybody, and I was one of the few people who was brave enough to speak out against Donald Trump. So I saw this as very much playing the long game. I don't think he was surprised at all to get booed off the stage. It seemed like he was almost expecting it because he said, I know, the truth is hard to hear.
U.S. Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina, who you believe is a front runner maybe for the VP slot if Donald Trump becomes the nominee, kept to his standard speech. He said Joe Biden and the radical left attacking the values that made us possible. He's tearing down every rung of the ladder that helped me climb. His personal story is a big part of his presentation.
It is, and I still think he is absolutely on a short list for VP. First of all, he didn't say anything that was challenging for the audience to hear. He doesn't offend any part of the Republican base. He didn't say anything that could be perceived as a slight against Trump or Ron DeSantis for that matter. And he talked about his personal story, which is inspiring. He said there are three specific areas he'd like to focus on to create 10 million good jobs: minerals, medicines, and microchips. And I thought to myself, well, that sounds like if you were vice president, that would be a good thing for the president to appoint task force and put you in charge of. You know, to me, again, this, it doesn't seem like somebody who's running to actually become the nominee, but he's young enough that he could have a long future in politics. And so I think that he is angling to not offend anybody, any of the front runners.
And we're going to rumble through the rest of these. Vivek Ramaswamy said, this is not a moment for reform. I don't stand for reform. I stand for revolution.
And he is a very dynamic speaker, and he really got the crowd going. This is what I've heard consistently, that audiences really like what he says. He speaks in a very punchy way. He had a lot of one-liners near the end of his speech, and he was the second to the last speaker. So he really got everybody going right before Donald Trump. I think he was a little bit lucky with the speaking order there.
And Perry Johnson talked about how he thought, in his words, it was ridiculous to send $113 billion over to Ukraine. North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum did not read the crowd well when he touted tax cuts, yes, but then drew boos from the audience by taking a poke at Iowa sports teams. I'm not sure what Mr. Burgum was thinking there.
Well, Oh, I mean, I thought it was lighthearted. He talked about some of the best days of his life was when they came and watched the North Dakota State beat Iowa State in the University of Iowa. And it was booze, but I think they were friendlier booze than what Will Hurd got. Let's just put it that way.
And the last three who spoke, Miami Mayor Francis Suarez said he's worried about the rising threat of China. Larry Elder said he would come after the epidemic of fatherlessness as president. And Ryan Binkley, the pastor and businessman, said, and I'm quoting, "It's God's will that we move forward as a nation." And Laura, who really can deny that?
I mean, that was really striking. I've seen a lot of Republican candidates come to Iowa and campaign with social conservatives. The Christian conservative, it's a very important part of the Republican base in Iowa, but I don't think I've ever heard a candidate literally claim to be speaking from God. I mean, he said, I'm just reading a quote that I transcribed, "The Lord wanted me to speak to you about the destiny of our country and some things that he's been saying." I mean, wow, that is a bold claim, Ryan Binkley.
Well, yes, it is. I'm not sure what the Lord has to say about Capitol Week. We hope it's good because it's 16 after the hour. And this is KHOI's Capitol Week with Laura Bellin and me, Dennis Hart, your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. Boy, there's a lot going on. We are here every week at this time, Lord willing, to talk about what's been happening in and around the state capitol and what it all means. Well, Laura, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, the Democrat, came to Des Moines on Friday ahead of the Lincoln dinner to rip the Democrats, and he appeared with State Democratic Party Chair Rita Hart.
Yes, and this is something we've talked about several times before. Because there isn't really a competitive presidential campaign on the Democratic side, the Democratic Party in Iowa doesn't have a lot of easy opportunities to make the news. They don't have people going around doing events that are going to make the news. And so they're trying to stage a lot of these events. And I think that the contrast, the reason why the Minnesota governor, it was a good contrast for Rita Hart, because Minnesota just wrapped up a very historic legislative session, similar to the Iowa legislature's historic session this year, but it was like polar opposites, the issues that they were working on. So in Minnesota, they were protecting access to abortion rights and to transgender care and other things that the opposite of what the Iowa legislature was doing. And so I think that that was why he was a good person to come here. But I mean, at most in the media coverage of what happened on Friday, I mean, usually there were maybe a few sentences about what the Democrats were saying, whereas just pages of what the Republican candidates are saying. And that's an imbalance that's just going to be difficult for Rita Hart to deal with this whole year.
So if you think we've seen the last of the Republican candidates coming in, we've got about 10 days before the next onslaught. The next onslaught is known as the Iowa State Fair, which begins August 10th, runs through the 20th. And there are going to be two separate events here for the first time. Governor Reynolds has invited all the Republican presidential candidates to join her in one-on-one conversations. And the Des Moines Register's political soapbox is going to take place. And kind of surprising to me anyway, Laura, most of the Republicans, not Trump, have decided to go to both events.
Yes, I was very surprised by that as well. So all of the Republican candidates other than Donald Trump accepted Governor Reynolds' invitation for these one-on-one conversations. And then all of them except for Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis, and Tim Scott also accepted the Des Moines Register's political soapbox. I think that for a lot of people, I mean, they just can't afford to pass up a chance at publicity. They know that a lot of the mainstream media, not just the Des Moines Register, but many other media organizations, Politico, the New York Times, the Washington Post, they will be looking at these videos of candidates at the fair. So I was a little bit surprised to see that as well.
So an interesting thing is that the Register's political soapbox invites people of all parties, and there will be some other folks there. Marianne Williamson and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. running on the Democratic side, they will be there, and Chase Oliver, the Libertarian. Most interesting one to me is Robert F. Kennedy Jr., because he's really made his name on being anti-vaccine and kind of a conspiracy guy. In fact, definitely a conspiracy guy.
Well, and I just saw something, the fundraising report from the Super PAC that's backing him, and all of the large donors, and I'm talking about donors who have given multiple millions of dollars to the Super PAC, are all major Republican donors. And the polls are showing that too, the national polls anyway. I haven't seen any Iowa polls that mention Robert F. Kennedy Jr., but basically he's getting a favorable reception among Republicans and not among Democrats.
And now we're not going to give you the everyday rundown here because you can't remember it, but they will be there between August 10th and 20th, several candidates each day. Some days there will be days off. Worth going to the Iowa State Fair. It is a fun event, number one. And I've been to that political soapbox, as you have, Laura. It's really quite a dynamic.
It is fun. And there are a lot of things going on. You can check the Des Moines Register has the schedule posted online. Governor Reynolds has also posted the schedule for her chats. Saturday, August 12th is going to be a day when quite a few candidates are there. So if you're thinking about a day to go to the fair, I might recommend that one.
All right. The Register ran a piece last week that raised my eyebrows, and they documented it. They asked the question, has the GOP debate qualifiers thing that the Republican Party has, in other words, what candidates have to do to get in the televised debate this coming month, has it changed the way Iowa campaigns are being run? The GOP is requiring candidates to have at least 40,000 individual donors and get at least 1% support in multiple qualifying polls. The Register's answer is yes, it has changed the way campaigns are being run now.
It has. And I think that the DNC did something similar with the individual donor threshold and a little bit of the polling. And I think that this hasn't really worked out the way it was intended to. I mean, I understand the concept is if you're going to be on the debate stage with the major candidates, you should have a lot of people who really support you. So 40,000 people donating to your campaign. I mean, that's you to donate to a candidate is a pretty strong commitment. But in fact, what's happening is we had Doug Burgum, who was giving away $20 gift cards to anybody who gave him a dollar. There are other candidates doing something similar. Francis Suarez, the Miami mayor, is doing something similar. And so I even saw Mike Pence say that no, you know, he's not interested in doing that kind of a kickback, I believe he called it. But, you know, that is a barrier. Campaigns have to spend a lot of money to do that, and they have to spend a lot of money on TV ads to hit this polling, all the polling thresholds. And so that means that they don't have a lot of money to do all the traveling around and have the field staff that they used to have. So I would say this is an unintended consequence of trying to limit the debate field. And if you had only two or three or four candidates running, they probably wouldn't bother to do this. But they know it's going to be unwieldy to have 14 candidates on a stage.
And here's how the Register has documented that. There's an average, they say, of 19 public campaign events for each candidate between January and the end of this month in this campaign. That trails the 32 events that candidates were averaging in the first 7 months of 2019 ahead of the 2020 Iowa caucuses, and it's less than what happened in 2016. So there's your documentation.
It is. And I mean, there will still be lots of events here. Ron DeSantis said at this Friday night Lincoln dinner, he said that they're going to be doing 99 county visits. So, and I know a few other candidates are also planning to do that. So there still will be a lot of events, but there's no question that it changes the landscape when these campaigns have to demonstrate a certain level of polling support. You can't really get your name out there without TV and radio to a lesser extent. You can't get the name ID to register in a poll. Whereas in the past, if you could really focus on Iowa, New Hampshire and breakthrough there, then you had a chance for the broader electorate nationally to hear about you.
All right, let's take a deep breath now and go on to another topic, abortion. As expected last week, not unexpected, the state Supreme Court agreed to consider Governor Reynolds' request to let a restrictive new abortion law take effect that would ban all abortions after about 6 weeks of pregnancy. So what kind of time frame are we talking about for the court to consider this request?
Well, the court's new term starts on September 1st, but they've already accepted more than a dozen other cases that they're going to hear. And as far as I've been able to determine, they have not yet put this on any kind of an expedited schedule for review. So it's hard to know. The Iowa Supreme Court usually hears oral arguments for 2 days a month, and each day they hear three or four different cases. So, but I highly doubt that it's going to be on the agenda for, well, it's almost impossible that it could be on their agenda in September or October, because they have to leave a certain amount of time for the parties to file briefs, and then there's a reply brief and so on. So, I mean, I would say the earliest that the Supreme Court is even going to hear oral arguments would be later this year. And then depending on how things go, it often takes 60 to 90 days for them to issue a decision. So for now, the law is still blocked. It is not being enforced. And the Iowa Supreme Court is going to hear arguments, not on all of the merits of the case, but on whether that injunction should remain in place.
So let's clarify in as simple a language as we can. Abortion remains legal in Iowa up to 20 weeks of pregnancy.
Yes, and that law is not being enforced right now. And what the Iowa Supreme Court is going to consider when they do hear the state's appeal is whether the lower court was justified in putting this injunction on. I do want to say that just the legal standard here is pretty deferential to the lower court. Usually the Iowa Supreme Court won't reverse a lower court on an injunction unless they find that there was a very significant error that the judge made. And so if they, let's say, you know, the Iowa Supreme Court allows the injunction to remain in place pending this litigation, that doesn't mean that they won't later rule that this law can be enforced. That would just mean that they don't think that the district court judge made a huge error when he issued this temporary injunction.
And very quickly, State Attorney General Brenna Byrd's office said it is still reviewing whether to permanently halt the longstanding practice of paying for emergency contraception and, in rare cases, abortions. We know that Byrd wants to stop it permanently. She actually said that on Iowa PBS Friday night, and a spokesperson walked that one back.
Well, this is all a bit mysterious because I started asking questions about this in February because I had heard that this kind of review was likely. And the Attorney General's office has been telling just many reporters, not just me, all year that Attorney General Byrd is doing this top-down, bottom-up review of victim services. Well, we're more than 6 months into her taking office. So how long does it take to review this victim services and what's going on with that review? They really haven't given anyone any details. And I'm not really clear on why it would take so long to decide. I mean, my inference was that the ban is going to remain in place, the new policy of not reimbursing for Plan B emergency contraception, and then in rare cases, abortions for people who are sexual assault victims. But it seems like the Attorney General's office doesn't want to confirm that just yet. But I've been trying to find out what's going on in general with that review of victim services, because this is only just one of many issues, but there are local agencies that get grants through that program. And there are questions about whether the Attorney General's office is going to continue to support some of those organizations.
And very briefly, Vice President Kamala Harris came to Des Moines last Friday and told Iowans to remain vigilant and continue organizing in the face of the state's temporarily halted 6-week abortion ban.
Yes, and Vice President Harris has been traveling to other states as well to highlight this issue. This is something that she feels very strongly about. And it's something I think that the Democrats feel that it's to their advantage to keep this in the public eye. I noticed that on Friday, that most of the Republican candidates, and Mike Pence probably more than anybody else, but it seems to be an issue that Democrats want to keep at the center of the political discourse more than Republicans right now.
And Laura, I wanted to get to this. We have about a minute and a half, maybe a little bit more, to talk about the story you broke. The Iowa state senator arrested during RAGBRAI. How can a state senator be arrested during RAGBRAI? You broke the story.
Well, I've requested the body cam and dash cam video, and I haven't received it yet. So we'll know more when I can review that video. But State Senator Adrian Dickey, he represents a district in southeast Iowa, including Fairfield and Oskaloosa, among other places. He has done RAGBRAI a number of times before. He has had issues before with how law enforcement behaves during RAGBRAI. He actually introduced a bill in 2022 that didn't go anywhere that would have said that law enforcement can't shut down business operations during a recreational bike ride across Iowa. But what happened a week ago on Monday, there was a large group of people, according to the law enforcement report, about 200 people blocking a road in Sac County. And after about an hour and a half, the officer was trying to get this group of people to move on. And Adrian Dickey, the state senator, was arguing and ended up getting arrested and charged with interference with official acts. Again, this is a simple misdemeanor. His attorney has said that he is innocent of the charge, that it was all a big misunderstanding. So we'll find out. This is not a serious crime that anybody does prison time for, right? So I don't want anybody to get the wrong idea. But he did, clearly something occurred, because it's not very common for police to make arrests. This was a sheriff's deputy in Sac County. Not very common for people to get arrested during RAGBRAI.
So was this all for publicity?
Well, I don't know. I mean, he, as I said, I talked to Joe Volcom, the former state senator who was on the subcommittee that considered this bill last year that didn't advance again. But he said that Adrian Dickey has had serious concerns about how law enforcement behaves during RAGBRAI. He feels that some of the law enforcement actions have detract from the atmosphere of RAGBRAI. And so we'll find out when I get the body cam and dash cam footage. But I wonder if that was more his objection to them asking for the bicyclists to move along so they could reopen the road.
All right. Well, we're just about out of time. Laura, it's been a pleasure. Why don't we try to relax this week and come back here next Monday night?
I'll be here, Dennis.
I will too. Lord willing, or Ryan Binkley willing. That is it. We're out of time for this edition of Capital Week. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I will indeed be back here in this time slot next week, the same time slot. And as usual, we'll talk about everything interesting or important or even entertaining that takes place in Iowa politics. And as always, we hope you can join us. Thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We appreciate it and we truly value it. Between now and next time, whenever that is, we hope you have a safe, healthy, and extremely happy week.